Morning. I just want to commend all of you for being here on the last day at 8:30. That's great. So thanks a lot for coming to this important presentation. It really looks at different ID infectious disease issues. And my topic's pretty pertinent to the actual, you know, title of this session, because what we're doing is we're looking at neglected tropical diseases that are also emerging or re-emerging infectious diseases. So we're combining those two categories. And then we're going to slip in a little bit about the policy and innovation of our environment associated with these particular diseases. And the reason for that is to kind of explain why there's not as many therapeutics and why there's not as much money being spent in this sector, though there have been a lot of international commitments recently. So I have no relationships to disclose. Probably all of you in this room know about the main factors associated with neglected tropical diseases, but I'm going to go over it one more time. Essentially, these diseases are the diseases of the bottom billion. They're a subset of 17 infectious diseases that affect more than 1 billion people per year. The role of zoonosis in these particular diseases is quite prevalent. A lot of the transmission associated with these diseases of the poor have to do with the infectious vectors, the ecological systems that actually support them, and also a lot of social determinants of health, including sanitation, water access, etc. And a lot of those, of course, crossing over into vector-borne transmissions. The other thing that's very important about NTDs is, traditionally and historically, there's not been a lot of money from the pharmaceutical industry or from international development put into these diseases. That's led to a lack of R&D, a lack of viable drugs in pharmaceutical pipelines, and also an innovation strategy that is very different, of course, than it would be for a blockbuster drug. So you can imagine for an NTD, when it's the bottom billion of the world's population, there's not much of a market for those drugs. So you really have to reassess how pharmaceutical innovation occurs with these type of diseases, because it can't rely upon our standard business model for drug development. So this is a schematic by CDC of where NTDs are, and you can of course see a common thematic theme is that they're all in the tropics, or they're prevalent mostly in the tropics, and in a lot of these countries that are by World Bank classification, least developing countries or LMICs. So again, this map probably provides a better schematic of the geographic distribution, but also the economic distribution of these diseases. Now, on the other side, a lot of you are probably more aware of emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases. And re-emerging and emerging infectious diseases have really grown in popularity, I guess you could say, because of all the different types of outbreaks we've had, starting with SARS, I would say, which really catalyzed this idea of the globalization of diseases, where a pathogen could get on a plane in Hong Kong on the, I forget what floor it was, of a hotel, and then spread globally in a matter of weeks. So again, we've had a number of re-emerging and emerging infectious diseases, either novel pathogens or just diseases that were non-endemic previously, and that's raised a lot of attention to EIDs, what we'll call emerging infectious diseases. Of course, the most notorious probably is the current Ebola outbreak, and that is also categorized as a re-emerging infectious disease. The continuing importance of zoonosis in this category, so it's very similar to the NTD characteristic. A lot of emerging or re-emerging infectious diseases are associated with increased contact, industrialization, environmental changes into habitats, and more, of course, close contact with animal reservoirs. The other thing that's interesting in the EID space that's very different than NTDs is you have somewhat of a bias in innovation and discovery and commercialization. So we are spending a lot of money on innovation for these particular diseases, maybe disproportionately compared to those of neglected tropical diseases. So here's a map of a few of the EIDs, and you can tell there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of different types of pathogens, of course, and they're geographically distributed, more widespread, of course, than NTDs themselves. So what we did, and this is something I did originally as a PhD student, so that was about 5 years ago, is I took an EID class, and I just was asking myself the question of, has anyone ever combined the two categories of NTDs and EIDs and seen where the overlap diseases were? It's one of those questions, you know, you think, oh, someone's already done this for sure. And I looked into the literature, and I actually couldn't find anyone that's done this. So that's what we did. We took two lists. We took the CDC definition of what are emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases are, also known as new pathogens, known infections increasing in new geographic areas, and known infections that are re-emerging due to public health barriers. So it's not necessarily just the ecological system, but it could be the public health infrastructure that leads to the emergence of an infectious disease. There's a lot of them, and CDC currently recognizes over 50, and NIH also has its own distinct list, though we use pretty much the CDC list. The key characteristics are they're dangerous, of course, because they're spreading into non-endemic areas. Then we took the list of 17 NTDs that are defined by the WHO, and we looked to see where there was overlap with those two diseases. The first piece we published was in a few years ago in Infectious Ecology and Epidemiology, which is a One Health journal. And I'll talk a little bit about the role of One Health in this particular space as well. So again, the idea here was that these subset of drugs that are classified as both NTDs and EIDs would have a dual threat of spreading to non-endemic areas, but also not being addressed correctly with pharmaceutical innovation. So here are the five ERENTDs, as we kind of coined it. And you can see a lot of these diseases, or all of them actually, have some sort of zoonotic component to them. In fact, three of these diseases are also WHO priority neglected and zoonotic diseases, or NZDs. And interestingly, some of them are actually categorized by the NIH as having a potential for bioterrorism, although the linkage is not as strong as you would think. So anyway, these are diseases that currently lack innovation to a certain extent, and also are neglected and potentially re-emerging in other areas that they were non-endemic to before. Rabies, I think, is pretty interesting just because you have multiple animal vectors associated with this disease. I've seen, obviously, peer-reviewed studies that talk about people getting bit by monkeys in Indonesia, tourism, not just canines, of course, and even in other types of livestock and other areas of the world. So it's a really interesting disease to look at from an animal reservoir perspective. So some of the common risk factors we identified are listed here, and I won't go through all of them, obviously, but there's a lot that relate to, of course, the epidemiology of the diseases, whether there's a vector-related risk factor, disease-related risk factors associated with the care associated with these diseases, of course, the drug treatment and development challenges. Often these diseases lack safe and effective treatments, and they rely on older treatments as well, and the vaccine development in this space is somewhat limited as well, except for, of course, with rabies, with the pre-prophylaxis vaccine. Social determinants are pretty rampant in these diseases, environmental risk factors as well, and there's a number of different integrative control issues that have to be addressed. So the problem with these diseases is you have to have a really integrative approach to them to ensure appropriate prevention and control. The main things we talked about were, of course, the zoonotic component of these diseases, as we talked about already, and this emphasizes the importance of the interaction between, of course, the human and animal health ecosystem. And we'll talk a little bit about, again, about how One Health interfaces with this. The role of economic development and international development to combat these diseases is very important, because a lot of times it's just the public health system doesn't have the capacity to deal with these diseases, and that there's underlying issues, associated with sanitation and development that also have to be dealt with. And those are not necessarily things that WHO deals with directly. Those are maybe more appropriate things for the UN Development Program to deal with when it comes to international development and financial aid. And again, a lot of these diseases actually lack effective treatment. There may not be an adequate stock of drugs. A lot of it's available through pharmaceutical donations, and there's obviously not a pipeline for a lot of these diseases. So we mapped out in GIS just a different schematic of ERENTDs and where they're endemic, and you see a similar pattern as far as how it maps to NTDs, because these are essentially NTDs. So again, these are diseases of the poorest. So the interesting thing about this space, and we're getting into the NTD space, is that there have been significant commitments to NTDs over the past few years. So this is an area that's growing, and we'll talk about it within the context of the SDGs. But I want to just emphasize, as a total, we're still way far behind when it comes to NTDs. For example, aggregate pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies contribute only 500 million to this particular issue. That's in the aggregate. So you can imagine, you know, this is not a space they're really active in when it comes to funding. The number one funder, of course, is NIH, and NIH is not necessarily an implementation agency when it comes to, you know, delivering therapeutics, but of course they're at the forefront of the basic science point of it and also the translational science component of it. And of course the Gates Foundation has been active in this space for a very long time. But you can see there is a skewing of funding, and of course $3 billion alone is not enough. So some of the things that are occurring in the policy environment is we've had a number of World Health Organization, World Health Assembly resolutions specifically addressing this issue. And we have some example of some specific ERE-NTD partnerships. But again, I think the most important thing in the previous slide was that we have these targets to ensure that there's sustainable vector control to lower the number of cases and lower the number of prevalence. But we really don't have a funding stream behind this to support these targets. So in order to have these WHA resolutions be really effective, there has to be a partnership that is in charge of these particular targets and also has sufficient funding to carry them out. So I won't ignore the fact that we have had a lot of action on this issue, including the London Declaration, which brought together a number of different stakeholders to, you know, kind of combine forces to try to tackle this issue. Though I think the important thing about the London Declaration and how it's been carried out is assessing whether it's been effective and where the therapeutics are actually going to, you know, move forward. And I think one of the things about the London Declaration and a lot of the NTD action is it's really focused on the therapeutic side and drug development, when actually that's only one part of the problem. So one of the positive aspects that have come out with NTDs, in my opinion, is the fact that the MDGs, we had these NTD issues, including reduce child mortality, eradicate extreme poverty and hunger, which all tie into NTDs because of the poverty and economic development component of NTDs. These were included in the MDGs, but were not specifically carried out. They were in that category of MDG 6 of other diseases, so the big three plus other diseases. But in the SDGs, in target number 3, you'll actually see a very specific mention to NTDs in target 3. So it says, by 2030, end the epidemics of AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, and neglected tropical diseases. So again, this emphasizes that the international community is putting more emphasis on this particular subset of diseases. And that's encouraging because it means that there potentially be more funding and more international attention to this subset of diseases. And again, the reason why NTDs are so important is because they have a high mortality rate within their classes and a high morbidity rate as well. So people's communities are devastated by these diseases because a lot of people can't engage in economic productivity. So one of the things we look at when we look at NTDs is you really have to reframe the whole pharmaceutical innovation kind of business platform for these guys. So first, in economic terms, we talk about push and pull mechanisms. So you have to have both of these in order to get NTDs off the ground. So the first thing you have to do is you have to use what's called push mechanisms, which include innovation funding, grants, subsidies for research, tax credits for R&Ds, product development partnerships, expedited regulatory review, liability protection, and that reduces the risks and costs for the very basic research. So you have to get these push mechanisms pushed forward to even start the basic research process, because again, in the end game, you really don't have a market for these drugs that's profitable. So there has to be some incentive at the very beginning of the process, even to get the process started. And of course, we all know how difficult drug discovery is in itself. So as you go through the innovation cycle, and you're hopefully able to actually come up with a viable candidate, then you have to deal with the other issue, which is market demand and actually making the product sustainable. And this you address with what we call pull mechanisms, including market guarantees, purchase funds, prizes for successful research, improved market information, tax credit on sales, IPR incentives, and patent buyouts. And basically what these pull mechanisms do is once you have a viable candidate that can actually address a disease, you need to create a market space for it so that it's profitable and sustainable. So again, you have to have both of these functions working correctly, which is extremely difficult, and you also have to have a successful candidate. So that explains some of the reasons why this innovation cycle gets so hard. So sometimes you may not have the incentives to actually do the early stage drug discovery. On the other side, you may have a viable candidate, but you may not be able to scale it up and actually deliver it within country because there's not a market mechanism to deliver those drugs. So again, inherently complex, and also that's why these drugs haven't been successful as far as actual viable candidates. I wanted to mention a few other large policy proposals in the space. One has been an idea for a global R&D treaty that has been discussed as early as 2004, but recently discussed in what's called the Consultative Expert Working Group, which is the group that WHO convened in Geneva to look at different ways to address global R&D spending and biomedical innovation. And what they proposed, and this is not the CEWG, but they reviewed this proposal, is that there should be a treaty instrument that would focus on global health needs driven research, prioritizing including NTD research, and that each country would pay a certain percentage of their GDP on a sliding basis. And then this fund would determine how they use those financing towards certain diseases that have a higher global disease burden or maybe just have a greater global health need. Again, this has been extensively discussed within WHO, CWG. There are a lot of open-ended questions. There's not a lot of countries that want to pay a tax for a global R&D treaty. And of course, within WHO, there's only been one treaty erected, which is the FCTC on tobacco control. So there are some logistic questions associated with whether this could ever get off the ground. But from a conceptual standpoint, it's the idea that there should be some international cooperation and coordination about how we spend our financial money on biomedical innovation. So another thing that's been discussed by Peter Hotez, who is of course one of the leading researchers and advocates for NTDs, along with Jeffrey Sachs, who's been quite involved in the space, is that we should take the global fund model and we should just extend it to NTDs. And the idea there is that the global fund is performance-based financing. It's been relatively effective when it comes to country ownership, at least to a certain extent. And again, it's been able to deliver and leverage its ability to procure medicines at a lower cost because it's through procurement financing. So again, the idea there is you either use the global fund apparatus as it is now and extend its remit to NTDs, or you create a new global fund apparatus that would just be focused on NTDs. So this is something that has been discussed at high levels of the international kind of community, but also has not necessarily, come to fruition. And one other thing I wanted to talk about was one of my own proposals, which is really about dealing with some macroeconomic issues, and that's looking at different tax codes and also trade-related barriers associated with NTD commodities. So the idea here would be that pharmaceutical companies right now in most jurisdictions just basically get a blanket R&D tax credit regardless of what type of drugs they're working on. So if you're working on the next class of ED drugs, erectile dysfunction drugs, you're going to get the same tax credit as you would be for an NTD drug. So there's an argument there that tax credits could be more targeted towards priority diseases and drugs that deal with an issue that's neglected. Also, there's a number of different trade and tariff-related barriers associated with NTD commodities. So when an NTD commodity like a medicine or even a malaria net gets into country, oftentimes it's taxed by the local government, and that leads to an increased cost in the actual product. So it's important to look at these different tax and trade-related barriers and see if we can lower them to ensure the end cost of the product is actually affordable and accessible to the local population. Again, the one thing that the CWG has looked at specifically, and this is in the context of all biomedical research for neglected diseases, not just neglected tropical diseases, but anything that's not being addressed by the global health community. One of the things they have looked at is tax breaks for companies for NTDs, but they've looked at a number of different things, including milestone prizes, which you issue a prize, and you hope that a company says, well, if there's a prize at the end, I'm willing to do some of the drug discovery now. They've also looked at different types of phases of the drug discovery process and providing award payments within those processes. So you're successful through the phase one trial, you get a payment there. You're successful through phase three trial, then you get a payment there, and then commercializing it and creating a guaranteed market for it by buying a certain amount of drugs when that drug is actually successfully developed. So there's a number of different mechanisms, and in actuality, they're running a number of pilot projects, and DNDi and FDA and MMV have actually been selected as partners to run some of these NTD pilot projects based upon some of these innovation ideas. So I can't get through the whole topic even in 20 minutes because we had one speaker drop, which is fortunate. But suffice to say, this research has been published in Clinical Microbiology Reviews. It's an 18,000 word piece, so if you need some help getting some sleep on the plane on the way back, you could take a look at this. And it really, you know, basically maps out, you know, the policy and innovation environment, and also the common characteristics of these diseases, these ERE NTDs, as we would call them. Lastly, I'm just going to say there could be a potential role for One Health. And One Health, of course, is this kind of interdisciplinary look at health from a total ecosystem or holistic approach that includes cooperation between physicians, ecologists, veterinarians, virologists, and policymakers. So this also flows into this integrative approach to NTDs, where we need to tackle all the components, not just providing therapeutics, but also looking at the social determinants and looking at the international development as crucial components. So we put forth a UN-based ERE NTD One Health framework, though you could call it an NTD framework as well. And the idea is that these different UN specialized agencies would come together on the issue of NTDs and address it within their own respective domains, but achieve policy coherence across these different specialized agencies and their respective stakeholder frameworks. So again, WHO would be in charge of the public health part of it, with TDR running, you know, kind of point on it. Poverty alleviation would be cooperation between UNDP, the World Bank, et cetera. And of course, you have UNICEF with the MCH side, animal health with the World Organization for Animal Health, and environment, which is a critical component as well, partnering with UNEP. And of course, there's the food and agricultural side of it as well. So if you can get all these UN stakeholders involved in the same space, achieve policy adherence across them, then I think you can really deliver an integrative approach from a policy perspective and from, you know, an actual prevention and control perspective for this particular issue. So last, a lot of these ERE NTDs have a dual threat, we believe, and they have to be prioritized within the subset of NTDs. They have a disproportionate impact on the poor, and they just lead to an endless cycle of a health poverty trap. It's really unfortunate. And it's in need of a total approach. So I believe in pharmaceutical innovation. I'm a policy guy. But I also believe that we need to invest in other sectors, including international development, and addressing the underlying issues associated with these diseases, which are mostly international and economic development related. So thanks very much.